Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
For those of you who are here at the center, I invite you to take your seats and don your lovely masks. And for those of you out there in the virtual world, I invite you to find a comfortable place to rest for this time in a consciousness that is peaceful, free, and rich with curiosity. I invite you to put your attention in the heart space. If you want to touch your heart, that's perfectly fine. Today we're going to be speaking about the wise heart, and in particular, the chord within the heart, that when it is struck, we perceive things differently. We perceive from the heart of oneness. So everything becomes an aspect of this divine presence. In my office this morning, when I was doing the prayer with my prayer partner, this little book was sitting on my desk from a mystic teacher in the science of mind, Emma Curtis Hopkins. And this is what she said. She was the teacher of teachers. Marian knows who she is. Emma Curtis Hopkins, and this is a little book called Self-Treatment, and I was taught as a ministerial student, this is all you ever really need. A simple, tiny little book that speaks from that mystic awareness of oneness. So this is Emma, and I'm going to use this as a launching pad for our treatment. She said, love is God. Understanding is God. Thy heart is love. Thy heart is God. Thy heart is understanding. Thy heart is God. The airs hide the splendors of the living God from thee, but when thou openest thy heart at the teachings of thy gardener, and she uses the capital G, the religion of union, unity, oneness, and his name all become one. The errors will stand aside. They will turn into fine lights, and their original estate is like thyself. All nature will then break forth at thy understanding of thyself. Thou art the one that should first discover thyself, and in discovering thyself, all things discover themselves. I'll say that again. Thou art that one with a capital O, the one that knows no other, that should first discover thyself, and in discovering thyself, all things discover themselves. And lastly, she says, thou art alone in the universe. Thou art the shining one. Take now thy seat upon thy throne. Thou art alone in the universe. You might say, thou art all one in the universe. Thou art the shining one. Take now thy seat upon thy throne. And so when we know that all are the shining one, and that we're taking our seat right here at the center as that loving presence, coming home to ourselves, to the heart of the one that knows no other, and as we have here at the center, that beautiful saying, that vision, to serve the one. To serve the one, knowing there's only one here. It starts with yourself, and then it ripples out until everything is seen as the one. I shared in the revealing service that there is a beautiful yellow garden spider, one of those prehistoric looking spiders, that has decided to make her web on one of my garden gates between the two sides, so you can't move through the gate without destroying her web. And her web is maybe 3 feet wide and 3 feet high, and in the center there is a zigzag pattern, which is the stabilizing energy of her web. And she stays right there at the center of this zigzag pattern on her throne as the Shining One. And every day, it's been a week now, Trey and I walk over and we see her and we bow to her, this golden spider, the Shining One, having dominion over her fragile universe. And I witness you. It says in the Quran, "Am I not your Lord?" To which we, the creation, say, "Yes, I witness you." So could we witness the Shining One in all its many guises, be it a spider in her web, being a butterfly drinking from a zinnia, be it a beautiful bird standing on a tree looking down at her creation, or a simple, humble worm that wiggles along the path, and we, seeing its fragility, we lift it and we place it in a pot, recognizing our interconnectedness, that we're here to be and help and serve one another. And so we enter into this service today with a curiosity, with an open-hearted awareness, with a realization that by knowing the truth, we are establishing ourselves in a vibration that is not bound by condition or the world. And then we hear Jesus himself who says, "I have overcome the world." And we overcome the world by not identifying with facts and conditions, but rather identifying with this essence presence discovered within the heart of hearts, knowing it is the same presence, the same chord that we strike when we feel love vibrating, when we feel hope flowering, when we feel compassion unfolding, when we feel kindness radiating from within. The chord is struck that we are all connected to one another, that there's only one life, God's life. It's perfect, it's our life. And we extend it to all creation. It says in the book of Genesis, "In our image and likeness, God created the world." And so in Genesis, it says it is all God. Everything in creation is an aspect of the divine. It's not a human divine thing, it's a divine thing, period. And all are aspects of that one life. I hear David in my head, the apostle of David, King David, in the 8th Psalm, who says, "What is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast created him a little lower than the angels, and hath crowned him with honor and glory." And so his perception is that we are here to honor and glorify that very essence self that we all are. That is not an ego trip. You have to be so humble to take your rightful place on the throne as the Shining One in your life, to serve with magnanimity everything in your queendom or kingdom, with gratitude for this honor, for this privilege, for this responsibility. We place our hands over our heart now in prayer fashion. We feel that connection that's always there. And we open our eyes and we enter into this space together with open hearts, open minds, ready to experience the mystery of belonging to the universe. Take thy rightful place, O Shining One. Doesn't that language feel just like you want to show up for life as the presence? You know, when you hear the words of a mystic, they're not teaching you technique. They're transmitting something that is so much greater. And it's kind of scary because it kind of takes you aback. That was Emma Curtis Hopkins, the famous mystic who wrote a book called High Mysticism. Another great mystic, a Christian mystic, was Meister Eckhart. And he would speak the same way. He would say, "The only begotten is ever begetting itself in me right now." Wow. Could we feel that only begotten begetting itself within us, this presence that we all share? There's a humility that has to flower within our soul to say that we are the very presence awakening in time and space, this eternal presence. And I think everything we do here at the center is to move out of the false identity of the egoic nature, which perceives itself as separate and other, into the true nature, which knows that it's one. In The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes makes it very simple when he says, one, one, one. If we teach anything, we teach oneness. Now, what does that mean in your life, to know that there's only one here, and that that is you? And so when we experience the seeming other and we have a resonance with it, and maybe the chord of our heart is touched and we feel like a tuning fork that we're not separate. Glory G sent me a beautiful video of Ramana Maharshi in his ashram at Arunachala. And he was a mystic. He went there as a young boy, I think he was 12 years old, and he never left. And because he was such a mystic, people from all over the world came there to be in his presence. And he taught by example. He didn't teach a complicated spirituality, but the simplicity of oneness. And the particular thing that Gloriji sent me was called Ramana and His Dogs. Now, Ramana had a holy cow. Her name was Lakshmi. And he said, Lakshmi is here on her last incarnation as a cow. And so she became quite famous, Lakshmi the cow. But then there were the dogs, the stray dogs that would show up at the ashram. And there was a belief among the Brahmin class, the superior class in the caste system, that animals are dirty, that you don't want them here. And Ramana, in his wisdom, said, they're all God. Who are we to think that we're superior to any of them? And who are we to know what karma they might have had that they need to resolve in this lifetime? And so Ramana would take care of the dogs and he would feed them. And in the ashram, he would always eat last. And when they brought the food out, he would feed the animals first. Then he would feed the beggars. Then he would feed the devotees. And once everybody was fed, then he would feed himself. And it was story after story of these critters that would find their way into them, these feral animals. And some of the powers that be, the devotees, would try to shoo them off. But he would say, no, no, don't shoo them off. And the ones that were the wildest would ultimately feel his love, and they would gravitate toward Ramana. And Ramana would become their the chord of his heart was touched, the chord of their heart was touched. And it was story after story, culminating and the very last dog, I think his name was Jackie, and he was the last of a long line of feral animals that would follow Ramana everywhere. And when Jackie got to the place where he couldn't walk, Ramana would carry him around. When he couldn't eat, Ramana would feed him. And he brought you this realization, as tears were coming down my face, that the chord in his heart was struck. And he recognized that I'm not separate from them. And then I hear Jesus, if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. And so what if we teach by example? We're not here to change the world. My beloved Mark Accomando, I spoke with him, and his ministry is evolving in Palm Springs, where he's becoming an environmental minister. And he's fighting, like the new Green Deal. Everything now is green. He drives an electric car. He's so proud. He thinks we should get rid of natural gas and get rid of gas. His house is going to be all solar. He's going as green as they come. And I said, it's wonderful that you're doing that, Mark. I says, but lead by example, not by proselytization, if that's a word. You know, lead by example, because you're inspiring me. Because if we think we could change the world by saying, you need to get an electric car, well, then we're dishonoring people who want to drive a lovely BMW or a Honda or whatever it is that you want to drive. I have an old truck sitting in the front of my house. It was Trey's in my first vehicle. Her name is Betty White. She's a white truck. She is our dream. Jean knows what I'm talking about. We love her. She's an old stick shift. Every time you get in her, you say, hey, Betty. She's got Betty Boop things on the floor. And we put her in gear, and there's something about coming home. I would never get rid of her. Now, is she the best vehicle environmentally? Maybe not, even though she got high ratings in Atlanta. She was always a good girl. So we're talking today about the heart, the wisdom of the heart. And I think of Rumi, who was one of the most heartfelt mystical teachers of all time in the Sufi tradition. And Rumi said, there is a window in the heart. And he said, and when that window is open, he says, love can flow from heart to heart. He said, but if there's no wall between us, what need is there of a window? So he's making us think. You know, we're all wearing masks out of respect for one another. But have you ever put a wall up around your heart which keeps somebody else out? I know a lot of people are afraid to get hurt again, so they think that they have to protect their heart. Because when you open your heart, you can become vulnerable, and then somebody might not honor your feelings as you think they are, and then your heart gets broken, and then you're tending a broken heart. I perceive things differently. If you take the wall down, yes, your heart can be vulnerable, but a broken heart can be an open heart. And then you can live with open-hearted awareness or sometimes broken-hearted. And it's a much more beautiful way to live, you know, to have compassion flowering, to be able to face the suffering of the world. We did a beautiful revealing service this morning, and Glory G reminded us of the Black Lives Matter movement and how, because of the abuse of George Floyd, for one, hearts began to open. There's a dramatic shift taking place on the planet. So what if, by our willingness to not turn away from the things that are uncomfortable, it actually opens our heart and we can take positive action, action that comes from being connected to one another. And so my invitation for all of us is to notice where the chords in your heart are struck, where you begin to feel a sense of connectedness, a sense of oneness. My neighbors, they're cat people. And they rescued this feral cat that was living underneath the street in those things. What do they call those things? Where the drainage ditch? And he'd come out of the drainage ditch. He was all matted. And they finally caught this feral cat. They took him to the vet. They spent a fortune on him. I think he has one eye. He had all kinds of things. They had to have him shaved. Now he's like their child. And they carry him. He runs to the front door with a leash in his mouth. He wants to be taken for walks. I see he's more like a dog cat than he is a cat. And just because they opened their heart to a feral cat who was down the drainage ditch. They have big oak trees in their yard, and one day, one of the baby squirrels fell from the nest in the oak tree. And the next thing you know, my neighbors, this is Chris, Glory G knows him, Chris Meadows, he was so touched by the squirrel that had fallen out of the nest that he and his wife called up somebody at the vets, and they said, get a dropper, and they started feeding it. Now they have a pet squirrel that they've been raising. Just because there was a chord struck in their heart, and they had to do what they had to do. So what if we could allow that during this time where things seem to be separate, to open our hearts to the cry of the world? My neighbor came over. She had tears in her eyes. Their heart was repossessed because they didn't have the money to pay for the bill. She asked if she could drive the truck, Betty White. I gave her the key to the truck and told her she's kind of a difficult truck to drive, but you're welcome to drive it. The next thing I know, she asked me for money to help pay for her medication. She was $41. The medication was 280 something. She was minus that 41, so I gave it out of my pocket. She cried. I said, hey, we're here to do this for each other. This is what we do in the world. We take care of one another. So what if we don't have to be afraid to ask for help from one another? We can actually show up for each other. I had a very heartening experience on Friday. I was called by a member of our congregation, and he said, it's okay if I share this. Bob Gifford, he married his partner. I married them 4 years ago when the Marriage Equality Act came from the Supreme Court. His partner was dying of kidney cancer, stage 4 kidney. So when I did the wedding ceremony here, there were a lot of tears because this was kind of a sacred time. You know, two gay men need to get married if they're going to have rights in this country. I was speaking to my prayer partner, and his first partner was named Carl. Carl was a dancer and an actor who caught AIDS in the 80s. And when Carl was dying, the family came down from the Okanagan in Canada, and they told Terry, his partner of 7 years, you're not welcome here, you need to leave. So he said, I never saw my partner again. So it's necessary, if you're gay, to get married so that they don't throw you out of the hospital room when your partner's dying. So with that said, Bob and Mark got married. And it was a beautiful, beautiful final days. And when Mark did make his transition, I was privileged to do his memorial service at the big Baptist Methodist church where Mark worked as the organist. And I asked if I would be allowed to say that I married them. And I was told that we do not accept gay marriage at the center of this church. They use the word church. I said, I know you don't. I didn't ask if you did. I asked if it would be all right if I announced that I married them, because there was such deep love. If you must, they said, and I did, and I felt so good. Mm-hmm. So Bob's been a widower for 2.5 years, and he was trying to get in the dating scene. But after you've been married for a long time, it's hard to get in the dating scene. And I got a phone call from him last week. And he says, David, this is Bob. He said, I've fallen in love, and I want you to marry us. I said, oh, you have? I said, how long have you known? A month. We've known each other a whole month. I said, a month? And he said, I know. I'm certain that this is the one. I've never been more certain of anything in my whole life. And he wanted it right away. He calls me on a Saturday and wants it the following Friday. And I said, well, all right, I guess so. He says, do you want to meet us first and give us some marriage counseling? I said, if you've made your mind up, I said, I don't think my meeting would have any effect on that. And when I did show up on Friday, I never saw two human beings more in love than these two men. One is 71, one is 63. And the 63-year-old had been married before, and he was a Baptist. And when he came out of the closet, the wife disowned him, took the kids away from him, said he was an abomination. And so it took him a time to heal his stuff. He was in a relationship for 17 years, and that relationship ended, and he hadn't been in one in many, many, many years. And the night they met, they both knew that they wanted to dig that deep well, that they wanted to make that commitment. And when I did the wedding vows the second time, there wasn't a dry eye in the face. This wasn't because your partner's dying. It's because when I would say the words, with this ring, I give you my heart. I have no greater gift to give. Well, then the heart just opened and the tears started to flow. When I said, may my arms be your shelter, they said, since they got together, they've been holding each other in each other's arms for a month now. And they said, you couldn't have picked better words. And so here's two human beings deeply in love where the chord of the heart was struck. And from the very moment they met one another, you can't say no to that kind of thing. I was looking for inspiration about the chord of the heart. And there was a book called, it's called Be the Power. And it was written by an Englishman named David Serlin. And he sent it to me because he had a chapter in the book about me when I was in England, when I spoke there. And in that chapter, I pulled it out. He said there was this crazy man from Alabama who came to the UK. And he kept talking about moving your head into your heart and letting the walls down and connecting here. And I'm reading how, you know, as a British person, this is foreign to them because they've got the walls installed. And here's some crazy man from the States telling him to take the walls down. And then the part that was so touching was when he told the story of Baby Speck. And he's telling the story of David Leonard, who was supposed to speak in Jamaica. And all of a sudden, it wasn't the pandemic, but the Jamaican conference had been canceled, and I was scheduled to be the headliner there. So I'd already arranged for someone to come to the center. And I just said to Trey, I said, you know, I'm just going to go off to the mountains and visit a friend. And Jody Rutenberg went with me just to have a break. And so it was great. We drove over to Hiawassee. And when I was staying at that cabin, there was an old dog, and his name was Speck. He was a yellow Labrador. He was named Speck because he had speckles on his nose. He had four white paws and a white tip on his tail. And he was old. And every morning I'd wake up, and there would be old Papa Speck sitting on the back porch. And then I'd go for walks around the holler, up the hill, and he walked right by my side everywhere I went. He was gentle, old, the very kind of, he touched the chord in my heart. And Trey and I had been childless. We had been petless for many years because our animals died. And once they died, Trey said, I don't want to go through the pain of losing them again. And he was a school teacher and I was working full time. And who's going to take care of it? So you just justify not allowing this love in your life. So I'm walking around and I said, does Papa Speck have a family? And Tom, my friend, said, no. He's the dog of the holler. Everybody takes care of him. Now, Jody Rutenberg, who's an animal rescue person, said, that's not a good life for a dog. And he says, you cannot take the dog of the holler and claim him as yours and leave. And so there was a standoff between Tom and Jody. What's the best for Papa Speck? And I remember it was Sunday morning, and I said, you know, if I could just find a dog like Speck, because he was such an amazing dog. Well, that day, it was a Sunday. There was no church for David. We're driving through the streets of Hiawassee, a sleepy little town in the mountains of Georgia. And there was a humane society, and there was a road that went up the mountain, and there were paw prints painted on that road. And Tom said, hey, there's the humane society. Let's go there. Jody said, yeah, let's go check it out. And I said, I don't want to go to the pound. I don't want to look at a bunch of animals in cages. That's depressing. And they said, 2-1, you're outvoted. So up that little road we went, those little dog prints up to the top. And of course, it's Sunday. The pound was closed. I said, see, I told you so. But then Tom, in his officious sort of way, pounds on the door. And they're cleaning out the cages. And he says, can we come in and look at the animals? And the person that said, yeah, sure, if you want to. So Jody and Tom leave the car, and I'm begrudgingly sitting in the car, and then they scream, David, come on. And okay, if I must. So I walked in the door, and Tom said, just give them the love. They're wanting the love. You don't have to take an animal, just love them. So I walk in, and all the kitty cats come over to their cage, and they put their little paw out, and I put my little finger out, and the next thing you know, I'm touching the kitty cats, and they're purring, and I'm having a lovely experience. And then I heard the scream from the other room, oh my God, it's baby Speck. I thought, what the hell is this? So I go into the other room, and there is this tiny little puppy that's the spitting image of old Papa Speck. She's got speckles on her nose. She's got a white patch on her chest, 4 white paws. She's caramel colored, just like Papa Speck, and she has a white tip on the tail. And he says, this is Spawn of Speck. And I said, Tom, and you had just said, you talk about a demonstration. You said, if I could just get a dog like Speck, and here she is. And he picked that puppy up, and he threw her in my arms. I said, but I can't take her. Because the rule is no puppies. That's the rule in our house, no puppies. And he said, when you ask the universe for a dog and that da-da-da. I said, hey, it's Sunday. You can't get this dog. He says, can this man adopt this dog? And he said, well, she was spayed yesterday. And if you have $80, well, I had $520s in my wallet. So I pulled 4 of them out and I handed them to the man. And he handed me this pup. And I got in the car and I called Trey. I said, guess what, honey? He says, you didn't get a dog, did you? I said, how did you know? And he said, and I said, she's so sweet. He said, you didn't get a puppy, did you? I said, well, you don't understand. I said, this was a demonstration of the heart. She had touched the cord in my heart, and I couldn't say no. And, well, that was a marriage made in heaven. Gigi knows. Speckles became the biggest challenge and yet the biggest blessing we ever had. And as fate would have it, she's the one that captured his heart. More than any other pets we've ever had. And he was the one that put her down out of love. And I see the divine order in that, that, you know, in my wedding ceremonies, I quote Ernest Holm, who says, divine love brings together and maintains together those who belong together. So when you know that divine love is in charge, it's always been in charge, then when the universe provides you with this lover from the universe, you don't say no to it. And then you begin to recognize, when are the lovers coming into your life? You know, you're all my lovers out here. I hope you know that. And that's saying it in the most Christian sense, you know, that we connect in that love where we're not separate. We had a beautiful satsang this week. And what I find so healing about all of these is people are suffering right now. They're isolating and they need to express. And when you create a loving space where the context is love, then the content can be whatever. The content can be anxiety. The content can be confusion. And that confusion, that anxiety, whatever is going on, that fear, is met in this field of love. And then after a while, the love takes dominion, and the anxiety becomes the background. It's not the foreground. And then the anxiety may still be there, but we're not operating from it. We're saying, oh, there is the anxiety. There's the fear. There's the confusion. And then you hear Rumi, I am astounded, lucid confusion. At least I'm confused about what's going on in this country. Anybody there with me? I mean, it's pretty confusing. And it can be very concerning, too. And yet, to live at the eye of the storm where we're not being pulled out to the storm on the outside. There's a line of Jesus when he's on the boat and he told the apostles, don't wake him. And then there was a storm on the sea and they got fearful and they awoke the master. And he said, you took the storm on the outside and you put it on the inside. A metaphor like that can be very profound if we can apply it to ourselves. So are we taking the storm on the outside and playing it on the inside? We could. You can watch a lot of CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, and perhaps you'll be there. Or you could just say, no, not for now. I choose to honor that space of peace within me and to not take that in. And then could I be the one then that's offering that peace? My Zen calendar this morning said, with all the confusion and chaos in the world, it is imperative that we live and resonate from that abiding peace that's always there. Wow. So could we make that our choice? To live from peace amidst the chaos? To be the fashioning factor of a greater vision? My beloved friend Carol Carnes, who's a religious science minister, she's a doctor of divinity, and she writes these things called conscious living, and she talks about how powerful it is to have a vision that's hopeful filled with possibilities. That's what a practitioner does on a good day. We see the possibilities that could unfold. Could we make that our vision, our, you know, to see? When I do a wedding ceremony, I invite the audience to see the couple in their wholeness, to see their relationship flowering, and then lend your consciousness to this vision that's wanting to take place on the planet. I love what Gloria G said at the revealing service. She says, I'm very hopeful that we've turned the corner. There's a shift happening on the planet. I believe compassion is awakening. And it's inspiring to see the young people getting involved and speaking about the necessity of voting. They were the ones that used to not vote. Now they're talking about, I heard this 15-year-old girl on PBS saying, even though I'm not old enough to work at the polls, I'm going to colleges and asking the other students to go there so us young people can have our right to vote. And I was telling, there's a beautiful downtown, if you go downtown to the square, there's a brick building from up, it's like three flights up, and it's all painted with a young black girl holding up a lotus, and it says 1920, 2020, women's right to vote. 100 years, a young black girl holding up a flower. Take up your shiny place on your throne. It feels like, yes, I can vote now. Huh. I'm a woman, a black woman, I can vote now. It makes me hopeful for our country. I want to give you a little taste of Mark Nepo and his 7,000 ways to listen. He talks about how life is always giving us messages, and it's about deep listening. Deep listening. He says, every turn in every day, we're presented with angels in 1,000 guises, each calling us to follow their song. You know, it was Yogananda that said, listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. And so he's saying, could we listen to that song in our heart with every breath, with every beholding, with every curiosity that's giving us a message? He said, only your heart can find the appointments that you are born to keep. I was born to have Baby Speck as my puppy. You know, Bob and Charles were born to have this deep relationship at their nadir years. With an open heart, it will lead us to an authentic tomorrow. He quotes Dag Hammarskjöld, who's the great statesman of our century, in his daily reflections. And this is what Dag Hammarskjöld said. He says, I don't know who or I don't know what put the question. And I don't know when it was put. I don't even remember answering the question. But at some moment in my life, I did answer. And I said, yes. To this someone with a capital S or something. And from that hour, I was certain that existence has given itself meaning in my life. And therefore, my life is in self-surrender and has a goal. Somewhere along the way, something awoke. A chord was struck in our heart that called us to be of greater service. It's not about me. And then he goes on to say, this involves holding our opinions and our identity lightly. Remember, it's not about us anymore, as separate beings. Holding our identity lightly so we can be touched by a future that is wanting to unfold. You know, our planet is wanting to heal itself in a consciousness of oneness, a consciousness of inclusivity, a consciousness of diversity. The days of racial hatred are over. You know, so he's saying, it means loosening our fist-like hold on how we see our world. It's got to be my way or the highway. So that other views can reach us, diverse views, expand us, deepen us, and rearrange us. Could we be arranged by life, rearranged by life? This is our wake-up call for our planet, for our country, for our democracy. He said, saying yes is the bravest way that we can keep leaning into life. And he says, listening to what we're not yet aware of involves that we silence the tiger of our mind. You know, the mind is the place where we suffer because we have thoughts. And if we think limited thoughts, fearful thoughts, confusing thoughts, angry thoughts, they can be caused to our experience. So Ernest Holmes would say, separate the thoughts from the thinker, and he made it with the big capital T. The thinker, the infinite mind, doesn't think the troubled thoughts, even though they may arise in the local mind. So what we're doing in treatment and in prayer is we're moving from the local mind to the non-local mind. Listen to what we're not aware of involves silencing the tiger of the mind and keeping our hands open so that we can feel when something timeless is moving through us, so that we can be servants of the heart and show up for the moment. Silencing the tiger of the mind and staying open is what keeps us connected to a deeper reality. the depth beneath the circumstances in which we experience a sense of meaning that doesn't change. There's something that doesn't change that's always there. Huh. Could it be the peace that passeth all understanding, as Paul said, and let that peace guard your minds and guard your hearts, and not to worry. And in your asking, ask with a grateful heart. He says, like inhaling and exhaling, the way we silence the noise in our mind and the way we open our hearts are the greatest forms of deep listening that must be engaged in if we are to survive. So yet again, we're being told to quiet our minds, to open our hearts, and to experience this field of resonance that we all share. Mary Oliver recently made her transition. She's a poet that I dearly loved. And Mary Oliver, one of my favorite quotes of hers is she said, "So tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and beautiful life? What do you plan to do with this one wild and beautiful life that you've been given?" No, and to stay in that question. And then if you read Mary Oliver's poetry, she says, at this stage of my life and my evolution, my whole life is about attending to the moment. See, all we're given is the eternal moment. When we move out of linear time and we experience the eternal now moment, how am I attending to that moment? Am I present when I see a little golden spider in my gate that I don't walk through it and disturb its life, but I can see its sacredness of its life form, and that it's teaching me to be patient. It's teaching me it's okay to be fragile and yet beautiful. So I'm going to close our closing with this lovely little book called The Journey Through Heart Songs by Matty Stepanek. Matty Stepanek was a young man that had, I think it was muscular dystrophy, and he was on the Phil Donahue show and the Oprah show. He was born in 1990, the year after I started my ministry, and he died in the year 2000. He died at the age of 20. And he lived a life as a child who was in and out of hospitals. And yet, being that he was in such a fragile state where he didn't know from one day to the next if he would live, it opened his heart. And he wrote poetry. And it was all about loving one another. And Matty Stepanek is someone, when I would read him, he would strike that chord in my heart that say, we're all in this together. And if the least of these can be talking about love and compassion and forgiveness and kindness, could we then, in our own secure world, be contagioned by his beautiful heart? So I pulled him out this morning because I needed a little Matty's energy. And at age 11, he wrote a poem called Heart Song, the song of the heart. And this is what he wrote. I have a song deep in my heart, and only I can hear it. And if I close my eyes and I sit very still, it is so easy to listen to my heart song. And when my eyes are open and I am so busy and moving and busy, if I take time and listen very hard, I can still hear my heart song. It makes me happy, happier than ever, happier than everywhere and everything and everyone. And in the whole wide world, happy like thinking about going to heaven when I die. Now this is a young man who knew that his transition was imminent. Happy like thinking about going to heaven when I die. My heart song sounds like this. It says, I love you. I love you. How happy you can be. How happy you can make this whole world be, Matty. His call to make the world happy through his own joy. And he says, and sometimes it's other tunes and words too, but it always sings the same special feeling to me. It makes me think of Jamie and Katie and Stevie and other wonderful things. This is my special song. It's my heart song. But do you know what? All people, he says, have a special song. It's inside their hearts. And everyone in the whole wide world has a special heart song. And if you believe in magical, musical hearts, and if you believe that you can be happy, then you too will hear your heart song. March 1996, he was 6 years old. Everyone in the whole wide world has a special heart song. And if you believe in magical, musical hearts, and if you believe that you can be happy, then you too will hear your heart song. So Maddie, we're going to do that with you right now. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. It says, I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. And all it asks is that we listen to that inner guidance system, to that felt awareness, that even though thoughts come and go, as Maddie said, that feeling abides. It's a feeling of love. It's a feeling of interconnectedness, that we're all connected in the heart of the One that knows no other. And we feel it with our loved ones. We feel it with our pets. We feel it with nature. There's a beautiful documentary drama called Dickinson, about Emily Dickinson, that I've been watching. It's touching my heart very deeply. And she was a poet. And she was in love with an old tree. And as progress came to Amherst, Massachusetts, they're going to be building the railroad, and her tree would be sacrificed. And she was so connected to her tree that she went to see Henry David Thoreau and asked if he would help her fight for her tree. And he said, it's not my tree, it's your tree. Huh. And so she realized that this was something that her heart had to take upon as herself. And you'll be happy to know that her tree was spared. And so what if the invitation is to recognize where we're called to see our connectedness, to see our oneness? Ramana did it with a cow and the stray animals. Some of us do it with nature. For me, it was a spider in a web. All pointing the way to love. I hear Jesus who said to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. He prioritized it. And then he said, and then love your neighbor as yourself, because it is yourself. And so as we open our heart to the love of the presence that we all share, a love that is universal, a love that is never born and never dies, then every moment is an opportunity for an epiphany. And everyone is a guru, a dispeller of darkness. Everyone, be it a spider, a tree, a squirrel that dashes in front of your car, showing you that I am life as well, here to be free and climb and have fun and play. And here we hear Maddie at age 6 saying, if we listen to our heart song and it's unique to us, that it will remind us that it will never forsake us, it will never leave us. And we come here to strike that chord on this Sunday morning, in this heart, the universe that we all share. One life, one mind, one heart, everywhere revealing itself. And we discover it first, right there where we're sitting, right there within our own being. I invite you to place your hand on your heart now. And feel the breath that's breathing you. The grace of the breath. The wisdom of the breath. And every time we breathe, our heart song is singing. And every time we behold the beloved, the beauty of God's creation, we are hearing that heart song. And every time we quiet the tiger of the mind and we become still, we can feel this heart song always offering itself to us if we will but listen with our hearts, listen with our soul. As Dag Hammarskjöld said, somewhere, some way, I answered this call of the soul, this heart song, and I said yes. And it has given this life purpose and meaning. And so the hope, the heart, the soul never stops speaking. That still small voice doesn't get louder, but gets clearer when the tiger of mind becomes still. And we can hear the call, the chord of that heart song. Guiding us, showing us the way. I hear the native people in their cry to the universe, and they would say to all our creations, teach me and show me the way. And so as we take that into our heart song, we can ask life to teach us and show us the way to navigate during these troubled times. Maybe it's by breathing consciously. Maybe it's by aligning ourselves to love, compassion, kindness, acceptance. And it's not very complicated. It's very simple to just be and to do our being and to be that love that knows no other, that sees itself reflected in everything and everyone. To know ourselves as that. Ta Tua Ma Si, thou art that. There is only that. And then begins to flower the realization that we're nobody separate and that we are everybody. And it is only one here. So, placing your hands over your heart as we do to end our service, I invite you to marry yourself, to honor this soul within your being by saying the heart salutation to the one heart, the one life, saying with me, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
The beloved in me honors the beloved in you.
In this heartfelt place, we are one.
And then open the hands, open the eyes, open the mind, and let your light so shine that it brightens the darkest places in the world. Thank you, everybody, for coming, for sending in your tithes, and for holding us all in your hearts at these difficult times. It means a lot. Class on Wednesday, satsang on Wednesday night. If you choose to participate, let Jody know for class and let Glory G know at the satsang, and we'll send you an invitation. 6 o'clock at night, 10:30 in the morning.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.